Sports Talk, 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN. Phil Williams here hosting Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, just plain right. And listen, by the way, if you find yourself driving outside of the otherwise broad AM-FM capabilities of WVNN, like you're on the road and you're just kind of tooling your way right outside of our listening area, just know that you can go online. Just click on your smartphone, go to rightsideradio.org, hit Bluetooth on your dash, and next thing you know, you're listening to Right Side Radio again live. Just go listen live at rightsideradio.org. Hey, so I'm going to spend a little time talking about some of the latest developments in Afghanistan because they do change by the minute. And then I got lots of stuff in here about state policy, about things that are going on in the world around us. Questions about Kamala Harris. I mean, there's like, have you thought about what's going to happen if Biden is not president? I mean, picture this. So, you know, as much as conservatives right now are fed up with Joe Biden, and by the way, report fresh right now on Fox is that his polling numbers are just tanking. Now, I can't imagine that his polling numbers are still in the low 40s, but apparently they are. But nonetheless, they're much lower than they were last month. All said and done, though, you know, the questions that we've had about, all right, can he make it through a term? First of all, let's talk about pragmatism, all right? I'm a pragmatic optimist. I say it all the time. I look at facts, I see things, but I'm always looking for the high side of the story. That's me. That's just the way I work. But I'll deal with where I am, and then I will find the optimism within what I've got. But let's look at this. If we're going to say, all right, Joe Biden, it can't possibly last another, you know, month. What are we going to do? Somebody call the 25th Amendment. Somebody start the impeachment. Well, first of all, and, you know, for all his warts and blemishes, McConnell yesterday, Senator McConnell, I mean, he's right. He said it. You're not going to see impeachment right now. You're not going to see impeachment unless there's a bipartisan push for it, because the Democrats control the House. That's where the articles of impeachment would start. They would then have to vote, and I've forgotten to what level, but it's a more than a simple majority is my recollection. They would have to vote to the requisite level to refer those articles then to the U.S. Senate to conduct a trial. I mean, truthfully, it becomes like a trial in the Senate. And you've seen it because Trump had to go through it. And they listened to the evidence and they cast their votes. And how's that going to work when it's split right down the middle? And I do believe Kamala Harris would have to recuse. I know I mentioned that she's the deciding vote on most legislation if it's split. But nonetheless, you're just not likely to even get the articles of impeachment forward to the Senate. Okay, so that's what's next. 25th Amendment. Let's get the 25th Amendment. You know, and so the reality on that is this. The 25th Amendment is an option that is available, but good Lord, the ability to use it is such a high bar. Because what you don't want to have happen is at any given time you have what basically amounts to a paper coup. You can't have a paper coup when there's a group of people that just don't like the guy. You know, if whoever, male or female, is voted into presidency, you don't want them being taken out because the will of the people has allegedly put them there. Now, there's all kinds of questions about the will of the people in this election, I know. But that being said, it would take the cabinet of the president who has been propping him up to say, yeah, we've been propping the dude up, but we can't do it anymore. We need to get him out of here. The likelihood of that happening is slim to none. Our best and most likely means of seeing change prior to the actual presidential election in 2024 is to win back the House and Senate a little over a year from now. Just a little over a year from now. And I know there's a bunch of you going, but why do we trust elections? Because you've got no choice but to press forward. And by the way, Alabama's elections are solid, all right? Other states have begun enacting laws that would prevent the kind of gerrymandering and goofiness that we saw in the last election cycle. Not all of them are super clean, but more of them are than were then. And I'm just telling you, you have got to start working and telling your friends to work towards 2022. Because things are happening right now in Afghanistan that are bizarre. Here's a story fresh off of, there's a website you can go to called Human Events. And I haven't seen it anywhere else yet, but it actually has quotes from Zabihullah Mujahid, who is the spokesperson for the Taliban. And according to Zabihullah Mujahid, he says that China is going to be the Taliban's main partner in rebuilding Afghanistan. Here's his quote. Quote, China will be our main partner and represent a great opportunity for us because it is ready to invest in our country and support our reconstruction efforts. Really? Like we didn't do that for the last 20 years? So what does China have to gain from that? Well, stability on their western border, certainly. But the other thing they have to gain is the fact that Afghanistan is rich in resources. Afghanistan is rich in geopolitical positioning in terms of where they are. Afghanistan is on the border of nuclear network, close to nuclear Iran. Afghanistan is literally far more strategic than most would ever imagine. And now the Taliban have announced that they are going to have China as their, quote, main partner in rebuilding their country. Rebuilding their country. Well, let's make sure we're clear. The country was built over the last 20 years in many ways. I mean, there were no cell phones. There was hardly any electricity. There was no medical care. There were very few paved roads. There were lots of broken former Soviet things the Taliban had torn down. Whatever they're going to rebuild right now are things the Taliban are currently breaking. Speaking of breaking, the Mujahid went on to say that regarding the Kabul airport, the airport should be clean within the next 3 days and will be rebuilt in a short time. Operational, we hope, by September. All right, so yeah, I read an article earlier, very interesting article, by the air crews who were in the last planes that flew out during this botched withdrawal that we had. And one of them described it as looking like something out of a zombie apocalypse movie. He said there were destroyed aircraft, there were dogs running across the runways, there were crowds of people kind of staggering around on the perimeters of the runways. It was the dark of night, but they had enough moonlight to see by, and it was. He said the whole thing was surreal, and they had to literally, of course, lift off without any authorization to do so because there was nobody running the tower. Now, I've been working with some other folks who are keeping me posted on things that are being done right now, trying to rescue the number of Americans and Afghan friends that we left behind. And I'm getting daily, sometimes hourly, updates on their attempts right now to help people move through the country to safe passage. I won't say where, but there's another airport in Afghanistan. There's a number of them. They're mostly former Soviet airstrips. But there's an airport where we had attempted to see some private sector opportunities to rescue people in the last 48 hours. The Taliban couldn't even turn on the lights on the runways. And also, by the way, directly interfered with the ability for these people to leave on planes that had come in to get them. I'm just telling you this is happening, all right? And don't forget it. I mean, I know there's other things that are taking news right now. You're seeing things like the massive flooding, which is epic right now in the Northeast, that comes off the hurricane we just had down south. You're seeing other things in the news. The southern border is really not being talked about yet, but it needs to be. But don't forget Afghanistan. Let us not forget where we are in this storyline. And there's a story right now off Fox that says reported texts are claiming that Americans stranded at Kabul airport waived their passports and were not let in. And I'm going to play a clip for you here in a little bit. In fact, I'll tell you what, Copper, what time we got? Yeah, let's go ahead and I should have given you some prep, Copper, but let's pull up clip number one. And if you'll just let me know when you're ready for that. But clip number one is the guy who wrote the report that I'm holding in my hands right now, because I do still have my paper and I've got all my reports ready. And this guy, John Solomon, wrote this report and said that literally that the Kabul International Airport is full of stories of people standing outside the gate with American passports in their hands, not being allowed in. Copper, if you got clip one, go ahead and play clip one.
Editor-in-Chief, JustTheNews.com, John Solomon. John, tell us about your report. Yeah, listen, there's a scene unfolding Saturday and Sunday while the spinsters at the Pentagon, the State Department, and the White House are saying any American who wants to come home is going to be able to come home. And meanwhile, there are Americans waving their passports. They got through the Taliban checkpoints. They're at the gate that the U.S. military controls. They're waving their passports. We are Americans. Let us in. And they were turned away. And a colonel who is witnessing this from afar in a command center says, we're bleeping leaving American citizens behind. He could not believe it. I've talked to soldiers that have talked to their friends on the front lines. The soldiers wanted to turn the key on that gate and to let Americans in. The State Department and their command chain would not allow them in. And everything that was going on there debunked what the Biden administration was telling the American people on television.
So what I'm telling you right now is that I believe that story because I also have firsthand information. I mean, I've been saying it for days, is that, my friend Hamid, who was my interpreter, his family is still stuck there. We had them approved. Now, there are five members of his family, a young lady and her four small children, all of whom had U.S. passports. I have copies of their passports on my phone right now. I personally forwarded those to U.S. government officials. I know they got them. I know that they also went to the gate and they waited for hours trying to get through to a place where they could walk onto a plane because they are U.S. citizens. And they were denied access and they are still in Afghanistan trying to figure out what's next. This is an awful situation, y'all. And it should not be this way. And like I said before, that's my version of I will not stop speaking what I've seen and heard. I have those passports on my phone. I don't intend to delete them. There's something worth putting my hands on and praying over once in a while because those people are stuck. But the story you just heard from John Kellogg on the Hannity show last night is literally saying exactly that. So there you are, confirmed from two sources. Me, with my own information sitting on my phone, and a national reporter writing a story after interviewing soldiers who were at the gate. All right, folks, we're going to move toward a short break. When we come back, I got another clip I want to play for you. Because the question is going to become now, what happens with our national security? Where do we go with this next? Because the commander-in-chief who just drove this issue into the ground is still the commander-in-chief. And people are beginning to question that. All right. Bill Williams, News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN. We'll be right back. Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN. Phil Williams here hosting Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Yes, and we say it and we mean it, though. And that is our goal at every attempt to turn these stories into a position that you can grab them, make use of them, and you know, when you have that water cooler conversation, when someone hits you up in the line at the fast food restaurant or you're in Sunday school and someone says, what about that thing? You're already there. You're already equipped for it. And so, folks, we were talking about Afghanistan a minute ago. And let me just say, we're going to switch gears at the top of the hour. I got a friend coming on, a guy named Todd Stacey, who runs Alabama Daily News. He did some interesting polling that we're going to be looking at and giving you guys a chance to take a solid gander at. But literally, we've got a situation right now where you have to go ahead and begin to question, what is the situation about the way things went in Afghanistan? Tell us about the way things could go in any other national crisis. Is President Biden currently capable of pursuing our national security interests? He says he's going to go after the bad guys. He says he wants a over-the-horizon ability to defeat terrorism at every level around the world. Does he have the history that says he would actually do it? Lieutenant General John Kellogg used to be the National Security Advisor for Ronald Reagan. Got an incredible track record, that man. That resume is something else. But Lieutenant General John Kellogg was on and was talking with I think Brett Baer from Fox, and he had these things to say. Well, I tell you what, Copper, go ahead and get clip two ready. I'll get clip two, and we're gonna hear what Lieutenant General John Kellogg. You tell me when you're ready, Copper, and I'll be good to go. But John Kellogg is a general who, when he speaks to national security issues, you're gonna want to hear what he has to say. So Copper, have you got clip two? Go ahead and run that one for me. No, Copper is on the phone because we have somebody calling in. Wow. Okay. I'll tell you what. I see that call, Copper, and I'll take it in a minute. But if you would, let's move forward on this clip first and see if we can get that out of the way, because I think it's important to hear what national security advisors are saying. Wow. I see what you're saying. I'll tell you what, Copper, let's do this. I just realized what you were typing up there for me about who's on the phone right now. Let's do that. Let me take line two. I'm going to switch gears here, folks, in midstream. Copper, I'll go ahead and take line two. Clyde from Huntsville. Hey, Clyde, this is Phil Williams on Right Side Radio. And did we drop it? Copper, it's killing me. Killing me. So we had a guy calling in a minute ago who was an airline pilot who just flew evacuees out of Germany. And so, listen, it's interesting who we're going to find who has personal stories. And if Clyde, just understand, Clyde, I've got an interviewee, somebody calling in at 3. If you get a chance, call back after 3:30. I certainly would like to hear your input. What are you telling me, Copper? Speak to me. What you got? Out loud. Use your words. What you got? He's back. Oh, great. I'll tell you what, let's go to line two then. Hey, Clyde, Phil Williams from Right Side Radio. How you doing?
I'm fine. Hey, congrats on your show. I listen as often as I'm in town and can, and thanks for your Army service. I've got two boys that are officers and pilots as well, so thank you.
Well, thank you, sir. I appreciate that very much. I'm seeing that you just flew some evacuees back from Germany. Tell me your story.
Yeah, well, we volunteered. Well, I'm active airline, and we volunteered for the flights that made up the craft flying to fly to the Air Force bases in Europe and pick up the evacuees that the Air Force were flying up from Kabul. And we also went down to Qatar and picked up a few and deposited them back at Ramstein and Hahn Air Force Base. And then once they were gone through their vetting process, or I'm not sure if it was what all that entailed, but once they were cleared to satisfy them at the Air Force Base, we put them on flights and deposited them in Dulles Airport in the Washington, D.C.
So you brought them back from their pre-positioning over in Europe and Qatar to Dulles, you said?
Yes, that's correct.
And was it a plane full, or were they just mixed in with among other passengers? Yeah, passengers?
My aircraft had three. I'm sorry if there's a delay on my end, but anyway, we flew 300 at a time on my aircraft.
Okay, so your aircraft was chartered solely for the purpose of bringing back evacuees?
Yeah, that's correct.
Wow. Well, so what was the mood on the plane?
I tell you, there was nothing but smiles, and all the young children that were on board. Our airline had coloring books and such to kind of entertain them as much as the language barrier would allow. But they colored their literally. It was interesting to watch a bunch of young kids that could not speak English, but they certainly took to the crayons and colored pictures, and the flight attendant gave them to the flight attendants. We decorated them in the back of the aircraft.
Wow.
And even some of the young kids ended up walking around with the flight attendants, aiding them as they served drinks and snacks to their parents and all the other passengers. So
wow.
It was very heartwarming. A lot of the flight attendants would cry because the people were crying, trying to say thank you in posthume, thank you in posthume, and some of them just said thank you in America in English. So
yeah,
it was very moving.
Well, Clyde, hey man, listen, I'm up against a hard break. I hate it. I'd love to hear more of this story, and I've got somebody calling in for a pre-scheduled interview at the top of the hour. But thank you for what you've done, and I'm glad you're back, and I appreciate you being a part of it and calling in today and telling us about it. Folks, Phil Williams, News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM. We'll be right back.